Welcome to Spirit of the Camino, a podcast about the unique and magical experience that is the Camino de Santiago. Join us on this adventure and discover the spirit of the Camino for yourself.
Hello, and welcome back to the Spirit of the Camino podcast. We are on location on the Portuguese island of Madeira, which English speakers often call Madeira. And before we get into what we really want to talk about today, it's just worth mentioning Madeira as a destination because it's been a place that's been on our radar for some time, but we've never managed to get here. And finally, this year we did.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why we never made it here. Well, I have a few ideas about things that were preventing us from making this trip before. But yeah, we had a good opportunity to do it this time. And we did it in a really interesting way that allowed us to really fully explore the island and kind of in Camino style, which was really interesting.
Right. So we're going to get into all of that. But firstly, if people are unaware, Madeira is, well, actually, it's a series of islands, but really there's just one main island. There's one other small inhabited island and then a few other islands that are uninhabited. And it's about 500 kilometers west of Morocco, off the coast of Africa, and a little bit north of Spain's Canary Islands, which are more famous and more well-known. But Madeira is quite accessible these days. Even the budget airlines fly here, Ryanair and EasyJet, and so we were able to get a decent flight from Lisbon. It helps when you do live in Lisbon. It's a lot easier to get to Madeira. But yeah, it's not at all difficult, or certainly not as difficult as it once would have been to make it here.
Yeah. The flights are very reasonably priced, and it doesn't take that long. What was it, a three-hour flight from Lisbon? Something like that?
Yeah, 2 to 3, yeah.
And it's interesting because in some ways, it's just like Portugal. You know, some things are very, very familiar. Basically, all of the man-made things. So, you know, the city, Funchal, the capital, which is really the only city-sized population center on the island, just looks like a Portuguese city. You know, there's Calçada Portuguesa paving the streets. All of the brands and shops and banks are all ones that we're familiar with. The people look and speak Portuguese because they are Portuguese. But then the nature is completely different from what you would see on the mainland of Portugal.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when you follow social media, for example, of Portugal tourism, you'll see sometimes they'll post a picture and you'll think, oh, wow, where is that in Portugal? And then you'll look and say, oh, okay, of course, it's Madeira, because this isn't something that you find on the mainland of Portugal. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's always been a little bit intriguing, and we're glad that we finally made it here. And as you hinted at, one of the reasons that we came here, or the main thing that we did while we were here, was to walk a hiking trail, which is called the Camino Real 23, which is to say the Royal Camino number 23. And this is a walking trail that goes around the entire perimeter of the island. It's 181 kilometers. And when we first found out about this, and we were already thinking about, could we go to Madeira and what would we do there, or how would we arrange our time and whatnot, then we saw that this trail existed and we thought, well, that sounds perfect because we can essentially traverse the entire island. And if we add a couple of inland trips as we have done, then we'll really get to know all of the island and we'll do it in a way that we enjoy doing anyway, which is to walk.
Yeah, and it worked out really well. I'm super glad that we did do it this way. I think that the way we did it was much more enjoyable. And, you know, we really got the sense of what life in the island is like, but then also got to see some really amazing natural parts of the island that most tourists don't see because we had this trail basically completely to ourselves.
Oh, completely. And, you know, we didn't know a lot about it, again, which seems like a caveat that we mention a lot on the podcast before we start a Camino or a remote Camino. There's not a lot of information about it. And so certain things like distances and elevation were a little bit of a mystery. But we sort of worked it out and made a plan and figured out that we could do it. So these Caminos Reais, which is to say the royal paths on Madeira, were built in late 19th, early 20th century. And so they're called the royal paths because the monarchy in Portugal ended in the early part of the 20th century. And so it predates the beginning of the Portuguese Republic. And what they really are is the first attempt to build a road network on the island of Madeira. And prior to that, the way that you might connect from one part of the island to another part of the island was by boat. And the reason for that is that Madeira is an incredibly mountainous island. It's very difficult to build roads even now, let alone 150 years ago. And, you know, we were quite astounded again and again. I think more and more as our walk went on at the ingenuity of the building of the Camino Real 23, the CR23 to begin with, because basically it traverses the entire island. It goes up and down an incredible amount, which we'll get to. It's cobblestones in its original form. And so you can just imagine these people hacking through jungle, climbing up mountains, climbing cliff faces, and installing this cobblestone road. It's really an incredible achievement, I think.
Yeah. And of course, not all of it is intact still today. So sometimes we were walking, we were always walking the, you know, the trace of the original, where the original road was, but sometimes you don't see it because it's been paved over and it's been replaced by modern roads. But the cobblestone original paving that you mentioned, the parts that are still there tend to be these really steep, like switchback steps up and down these mountains, which were the most challenging parts for us to walk. And then, you know, as you're doing it, you're thinking, well, it's hard enough for me just to walk up and down this, but imagine the people who had to actually build it in the first place when there was no road for them to walk on, and they're the ones building the road. Yeah, it's really hard to imagine how that was even possible.
Yeah, and so these very steep parts are often in the form of steps, and they're sort of a bit rounded steps, but both the horizontal part of the step and the vertical part of the step are paved with these cobblestones. And as you mentioned, a lot of those step parts, the really steep parts going both up and down, are still there because these are the parts that couldn't be replaced by roads because they're too steep. And, you know, in Portugal, walking Caminos, Camino de Santiago in Portugal, cobblestones are an issue. And there's various types of cobblestones. We have the granite sets that are north of Porto that a lot of people, including us, had some trouble with because it's very hard on the knees and the ankles and everything. And then we have the Calçada Portuguesa, which you mentioned earlier, which is the black and white mosaic pavement that you see in a lot of towns in Portugal, including here in Madeira. Also in Madeira, in some of the towns, they have an even more special type of cobblestone, which we haven't quite come up with a great name for yet.
But maybe there is a name, an official name for it, but we're not aware of it and we'd never seen it until we came here. So yeah, as someone who has to deal with foot problems, you know, I have done my fair share of complaining about the various types of cobblestones that exist in mainland Portugal. And then in Madeira, they just take it to a whole other level. Because yeah, the ones that you're referring to, what did we call them? The pokies?
Yeah, pokey pebbles.
Pokey pebbles, yeah. Because they are little pebbles, but so they've been placed into concrete into different patterns, much like Calçada Portuguesa. You know, sometimes you'll have white ones and black ones, and they'll make little designs and things with them. But the pebbles are made to like stand on end, so it's not the flat part, it's the edge of the pebble that sticks up and like sticks into the sole of your foot. So it's really incredibly uncomfortable to walk on.
Right, so when we arrived in Funchal, the capital, and we saw these cobblestones and we knew that there were cobblestones on our route, we thought, oh my God, is this what it's going to be? We're going to have to walk on these pebbles and have them just kind of sticking up into the sole of your foot all the time. But fortunately, that's not what the Camino Real cobblestones are like, and so they're much flatter, and as far as cobblestones go, they're not too bad to walk on.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't know if I would go that far. No, I think they're quite rustic. They're actual cobblestones. We refer to a lot of things as cobblestones, such as the granite sets. Most people would look at those and call those cobblestones, but I think technically they're not, because they're kind of more uniform. You know, they've been cut into squares or rectangles that are all of the same size, and they've been put more or less neatly together, whereas the cobblestones on the Camino Real 23 are all different shapes and sizes and just random pieces of rock that have been put together, you know, as best they could. It's very rough. I'm actually incredibly amazed and thankful that my feet held out really well on this Camino. I'm still amazed that I didn't have more plantar fasciitis pain than I did. I have a new pair of shoes, which seems to have worked wonders. But yeah, I wouldn't say that, you know, oh, don't worry about the cobblestones. I think they're pretty rough on the feet.
All right, fair enough. Though, of course, it is worth pointing out, as you've hinted at, that not all of the route that we walked was on these cobblestones, and actually most of it is not. And I would guess, and it is just a guess, that maybe 20% of the route is on these cobblestones. And as you said, it's mostly on the steep ups and downs. And so, for example, the first day that we walked out of Funchal, we walked a 25-kilometer day, and we didn't walk on these cobblestones at all for the first day. We didn't see them until the second day, and even then only briefly. But as we kind of went further into it in the middle section of the Camino, then we saw more and more of these cobblestones, and again, for the steeper parts, up and down.
Yeah, and it turned out that we did walk on them at some point every day except for that first day. Out of 9 days, we did it in 9 days, but, you know, maybe we'll talk more about the different resources that we've used and the various information that's out there, which is not very much. But yeah, we're following a couple of different blog posts of people who had done it in the past. One person had done it in 7 days, which I would not recommend, and another couple had done it in 10 days, which seems more reasonable. Yeah, if I had it to do over again, there's definitely one day that I, in particular, that I would have broken up into two had I known what was in store for us. So, but anyway, out of our 9 days, 8 of the 9, we did walk on these cobblestones at some point.
So moving on to the highlights of the Camino Real 23, and basically there's just one main highlight which has its own subcategories, and that is nature. And that's what this is about. It's a nature hike. There's very little in the way of historical things to see.
Apart from the road itself.
But it's really just all about the nature, and the nature is amazing, and that's completely worth coming here and doing that just for the nature. And so, as we've mentioned, Madeira is a very mountainous island, and essentially throughout the entire island, there are mountains that rise up from the sea. It's kind of like a square island, so you have a north, south, west, and east coast, and the degree of the steepness of these mountains or cliffs does change throughout the island as you're going. Particularly on the north coast, the mountains are steeper and rise higher directly out of the ocean, but basically there are rising hills or cliffs or mountains across the entire island. Mm-hmm. And that's what one of the things that makes it so amazing is that you're walking a lot of times on these cliffs or on these mountains. More often than not, when you're walking along the ocean, you're not at the level of the ocean. You're above mm-hmm. the ocean.
Yeah.
And because some of these cliffs and mountains are so steep, you're really just looking down on it. I remember, for example, I shared just one particular photo looking down at a beach with my family, and one of my brothers said, "Do you have a drone?" They thought it was a drone shot, and it wasn't. It was just that you're literally, you know, hundreds of meters, in this case, above the ocean, but right on top of the ocean. So you just look down from this cliff, and then you're just looking directly down on this beach as though it's a drone that's, you know, hundreds of meters above your head. And so that was really a large part of the theme of the whole thing, was that you're often looking out at the ocean, and when you're very far above the ocean, it's so enormous, and you look out and the scale of everything is so massive, and that was really cool.
Yes, the nature is definitely the highlight, and, you know, I'd say the main reason to do the Camino, but you do pass through almost all of the population centers on the island as you do the walk, because most people live on the coast. And so you pass through all these different towns and villages. And, you know, that's interesting to see too. And that does give it more of a Camino de Santiago type feel, particularly the first 3 days or so out of Funchal, because the south is a lot more populated than the north because of the geography that you mentioned. And so, yeah, we did pass through towns. None of them really had really compelling history or architecture, at least that we noticed or that we knew of. But I'm still really glad that we did it that way, and that we did walk through them and experience life on Madeira and not just the nature out in parts, you know, that are not actually habited by people.
Yeah, it's a bit of a juxtaposition in that way, because it's a very wild walk, especially on the west coast and especially on the north coast. But yes, you do pass through these population centers. So on the one hand, it seemed very remote sometimes. But on the other hand, there were always bars mm-hmm. Throughout each stage. There were restaurants throughout each stage. So it's certainly possible to do it in a Camino de Santiago type of way, mm-hmm. Which is that you make your stops, you know, every a couple of hours. Maybe you don't have one every couple of hours sometimes when you're doing one of these big climbs up into the forest, but there are regular bars and...
Bars in the Spanish and I guess also Portuguese sense of the word, not a place where you go to get drunk, but a place where you can have a snack or a drink or a refreshment of some kind.
Yes, you can treat it like a Camino in that way. It's not that you have to carry enormous amounts of food or that you have to carry a tent or anything like that. And so, yeah, in that way, it can have a little bit of a similar feel to the Camino de Santiago, but it's really the nature that's between those towns that's really what you're there for, rather than, you know, being really excited to arrive in a certain town at the end of the day. And so the highlights for us were all of these nature things. And we really liked, in particular, the West Coast and the North Coast. And so those were the middle days of the Camino. As you mentioned, the South Coast is more populated, and so that was just a little bit less wild. And once we got to our days 4 through to 7, I think those were the days that we really liked. And if you were going to do a shorter version of the walk, maybe you could just do around those days on the West Coast and the North Coast, because the areas that are closer to Funchal are more built up and you're walking in more urban or suburban areas. But those places on the West and the North Coast are really more rural and more wild. And so apart from the cliffs that we mentioned, there are also... Well, they're almost interchangeable between the cliffs and the mountains. There are also forests that you walk in. Sometimes you're climbing when you're doing these big upward climbs. Sometimes you're doing it in a forest. Other times you're doing it kind of on the cliff face and you can just look out and you have the ocean. The ocean is sort of always there. It's always there and thereabouts. And so, you know, you're always looking at these cliffs or mountains, or you're looking at some of the crazy flora that they have in Madeira, with these spiky plants and unusual plants that we don't usually see on the mainland.
Flowers everywhere.
Flowers everywhere, but the ocean is kind of always there. It's always there in the background, and so that's a really cool part of this Camino as well. The other thing that we thought was interesting is that for all of this ocean, for all of this coastline, there are very few beaches.
Yes.
And that worked in our favor, I think, because it meant that there weren't a lot of beach goers going to some of the places where we were going. And so that made it a bit more remote and a bit more, I guess, enjoyable for us. We've even read that they had imported some sand from Western Sahara to create some beaches. And we saw one of these on the south coast.
It still wasn't a great beach.
No, it wasn't a great beach. We did see a couple of black sand beaches, but mostly, no, it's not beaches at all, because these cliffs just rise right out of the water. And then sometimes there are beaches where there are just stones or pebbles and not sand. And so those aren't great beaches to go and lie out. And we saw people doing it sometimes, or sometimes that an effort had been made to put out some platforms or something to make it a bit more enjoyable. But on the whole, we would say that Madeira is not a great beach going destination. Even despite all this amazing coastal scenery, there aren't really many places where you can lay out your towel and, you know, have a relaxing time on the sand, because there just basically is hardly any sand.
Yes, which, you know, is probably, it means that the tourism has developed in a different way and has developed in a more low-key way than the Canary Islands, for example, which you mentioned, which are fairly close by and, you know, have been subject of huge mass tourism and, you know, beach holiday-centered tourism. Whereas on Madeira, it is more about the nature. Hiking is a pretty popular activity here, even for people who, you know, don't necessarily do long walks as much as we do. But when they're here, they will go on a walk of a few hours, and you can see amazing things in a day hike of a few hours, too.
And the other thing that we should mention about the nature, and it's sort of a combination of nature and a man-made element in that nature, is that there's something on the island of Madeira that's quite famous, and they're called levadas. And these are water channels that are cut into the interior of the island, and they're not usually close to the coast. They're usually more in the interior where it's higher, but they're flat water channels that are often cut into the side of a mountain or in a forest or something like this. And because in order to create these water channels to begin with and to maintain them now, there is a kind of path that runs alongside all of these water channels. And there are many, many of these channels.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge network. I feel like I did hear the number of how many kilometers of levadas there are, and it was in the thousands. There are levadas all over the island. And yeah, most of the most popular hikes are actually the levadas hikes, because it's generally quite flat, or more or less flat. because of the nature of, you know, it's bringing water. It's kind of like an aqueduct that's bringing it down for purposes of irrigation, or, you know, down to other areas that don't get as much rainfall as they do in the center of the island in the mountains. So they're pretty ideal hiking paths, really, because you can't get lost. You just follow the channel. You have an unlimited supply of water that's right there next to you. And they're usually pretty, you know, like I said, flat and easy to walk on, and beautiful scenery.
The trail that we did, the Camino Real 23, it doesn't pass any of the levadas because the trail goes along the coast. But there are a couple of opportunities where you can go a little bit off the Camino and mm-hmm. find or, you know, go along one of these levadas. So we had, as usual, using using maps and using tracking, and with maps.me, for example, they would often have the levadas marked, and you could see in a certain case, you could see, okay, our path goes this way, and right near the path there's this levada, and so we could take that instead of going maybe on the road, and that would be a more enjoyable walk. So we did that a few times, and that was great. And there was one in particular called the Levada do Moinho, which we did on the west coast. It was on our day 5, and we absolutely loved it. I went through this forest, and it was this incredibly enchanting forest, and it was very thick and dense forest. And again, it was another one of these things, like with the building of the actual Camino Real with the cobblestones. You'd sort of see this levada and see this old growth forest and think, oh, it's so cool that they actually came and built this irrigation channel or this water channel in here, but yet everything surrounding it seems like it hasn't been touched or hasn't been seen by human eyes, mm-hmm. you know, in forever. And so the people who have created the tracks for the Camino Real, and we'll come to this in a moment, they wanted to maintain as much as possible the original track. But what that might mean sometimes is that you have the cobblestones that we walk on, but then other times it might be that a modern road has been paved over the Camino Real and you don't have it. And so then, yes, on the one hand, it's admirable to want to continue to follow where the path once existed, but if it's just been replaced by a modern road, and then just nearby to that you have a levada in a forest, which is an amazing hike, well then it's really a no-brainer to choose the levada if you can.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, maybe there are purists out there who want to say, okay, I want to walk exactly where the Camino Real was, even if it's not there anymore. But there were two times in particular where there was a levada that was almost exactly parallel with the tracks, which were actually on a modern road, which, yes, used to be the Camino, but now, you know, it's not a very pleasant hike anymore. Whereas the levada, which was just, you know, you couldn't see one from the other, but they were very close by and they were going exactly parallel to each other. And it was only because of one of the blogs that I had found of a German-speaking couple who had done the walk five years ago. And they had taken these levadas on these two occasions. And so then I looked on the map and said, oh yeah, we could do that too. And those were major highlights, particularly the Levada dos Moinhos that you mentioned. Yeah, I'm so glad that we took that rather than the modern road.
Yeah, because that's really the one element, I guess, that's missing from this coastal walk. Are the levadas. I mean, the mountains in the interior are higher than the mountains on the coast, but you're still seeing mountains on the coast. But if you were to just follow exactly the Camino Real and not do any levada walks and not do any extra levada walks before or after, then you'd be missing out on something there, I think. Mm-hmm. And so we did that a couple of times, as you mentioned, and then we also did a separate levada hike as a day hike away from the Camino Real. So that's definitely something that people should do as well if they have the opportunity. Moving on to some of the practical matters, we did mention that there's not a lot of information about the Camino Real. It turns out, and we didn't figure this out until we arrived on the island, actually, there is an association for this hike and for the hikes in general of the other, or of all of the Camino Reais, because there are several of them that you can do in Madeira. So there's this association, and there's a dozen or so people, I think 15 they mentioned, who are really active in it. Mm-hmm. And they're doing fantastic work in trying to publicize this and trying to help people like us do it. And there's a lot of misinformation out there as well by people who have said that it's dangerous or that you shouldn't attempt it, and it turns out that they were on different trails. Mm-hmm. The tourism office has a sort of political issue with the association. And so when we went to see them, they told us, they recommended that we didn't do it and said that parts of it were closed and things like that. Now, this was incorrect information.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely the association is where you should go because they have the best and latest information. They're also the ones who are responsible for the tracks. And just this year, they made a new set of tracks just because every now and then something happens in terms there might be a little landslide or something like that, and they might alter the path a little bit. And so we had 2023 tracks, which were just made about 2 months ago, I think. And so that was really good to have the latest information there. But they were incredibly helpful to us. And without them, I'm not sure what we would have done.
Yeah, especially after going to the tourism office here in Funchal, where, as you said, the staff were very unfriendly and unhelpful. And that was not just our experience. We talked to some other tourists who also had similar experiences, and I read a number of bad reviews of the tourism office on Google Maps, so I think that's kind of...
Yeah, I think their score on Google Maps was less than 2 out of 5 stars, or around 2 out of 5 stars.
I don't remember what it was, but yeah, it was bad.
For someone whose job is supposed to be is to help people, to get a rating like that is really poor.
Yeah, and I was already a bit nervous, really nervous actually, about the hike, and you know, wanted to get some further information and some assurance from them, and they just made me that much more nervous. Whereas again, this was based on false information of, you know, watching videos of people saying that they were walking the Camino Real 23, and then I later realized that actually that's not what they were walking at all. They had just seen a sign and thought that's what it was, but it was a completely different trail. So yes, there's very little information about the Camino Real out there, and then what is out there is often incorrect. So yeah, the association is the best place to go. And so the name in Portuguese is the Associação do Caminho Real da Madeira, I believe. Their website is caminhoreal.pt, which we did actually find before we arrived here. I remember coming across the website and I think getting the tracks from the website when we first started planning a few weeks or months ago. But the website is not really updated, whereas they do have a Facebook page that does give much more updated information. So I would recommend going there and then contacting them through the Facebook page, because they are active on Facebook, whereas I had previously sent an email and hadn't gotten a reply. And then just at the very last minute, you know, the last day before we started, when we were already here in Funchal, we were finally able to make contact with people from the association. We realized that there's actually a credential, or a pilgrim's passport, as they're sometimes referred to on the Camino de Santiago. This one's a little bit different, but also gave it a Camino de Santiago kind of feel. And yeah, really added to the experience for us. So I was really glad that we were able to get the credencial and then collect our stamps along the way.
Yeah, and we'll come to the stamps in a minute, but just a few of the other practicalities. There are no way marking signs.
Nope.
For this Camino. So you will have to use tracks and rely on tracks, and that can be a bit difficult. You know, it's one thing to use tracks as a backup. It's another thing where it's your primary and in fact only way of finding your way. So, you know, we had to just be a lot more aware of that, and not a great thing to have your phone out all the time, kind of making sure that you're going the right way. And a few times we missed a turn, and then, you know, we would look a couple minutes later and see that we'd missed a turn. So it's not ideal. It'd be great if there were arrows that we could follow. That would be much easier. But, you know, you can also do it both ways. We did this clockwise, but you could also do it counterclockwise, because there's no way marking signs. So it doesn't matter in that way, because you're not looking for arrows. But yeah, you will have to use tracks, and we'll give you the links in the show notes to where you can get the tracks and also to the association information and all of that.
Yeah, and you can totally do it in either direction, clockwise or counterclockwise. It doesn't really make a difference in terms of the difficulty level, because it's just constantly up and down. So every time we would be going up, going the other way, you'd be going down, but then vice versa. So I think it pretty much evens out in that way. And of course, you could start anywhere on the island as well. You don't have to start in Funchal. That's probably the most obvious place if you're coming here, you know, as a visitor. But one of the blogs that I mentioned, this German-speaking couple that had done it in 2018, they live on the island in a little village called Estreito da Calheta. And so that was their starting point. And then they actually did it counterclockwise, so in the opposite direction to us, which made it a little bit difficult to follow the information that they were providing. But yeah, there are multiple options in terms of where to start from, how many days to do it in, and also which direction to go.
Right. And speaking of the ups and downs that you just mentioned, there are a lot of ups and downs.
A lot, yeah.
And so this is a really serious hike. It's a difficult hike. It's not flat like the Camino Santiago tends to be. And so it was very common that basically most days we would have done 1,000 meters up and 1,000 meters down of elevation change. One day we think we did about 2,000 meters of up, which is, mm-hmm. you know, for at least by our standards, a really serious day of climbing.
And yeah, so, I think we've only done that on one other occasion in our lives. So it was massive. I didn't know that my body was capable of that. I've learned that it is capable of that. So we made it through, we survived, which was great. But yeah, that was a massive day.
Yeah, so if you're going to do it, you should be very aware that, yeah, it's a serious hike in terms of ups and downs. As we mentioned, it's not, well, we didn't find it dangerous at all, even though there's some of this misinformation that suggests that it might be. But yeah, the ups and downs are difficult, and some of them are quite steep.
If you're someone who's afraid of heights or suffers from vertigo, then this is probably not the hike for you, because you are at a high height quite often.
Yeah, and when we say a high height, what we're really talking about in real terms is you're often about 500 to 600 meters above the level of the ocean. And right, as we said before, on top of the ocean. So that was sort of the sort of standard climb on this hike, is that we would kind of look at the elevation, we'd see it, and we're like, okay, here we are, we're at the sea level here, and we've mm-hmm. got, we're 500 meters up, that's where we're going, and then we'll get to the top, and then you come straight back down again.
But those paths were pretty wide and secure. Sometimes there were guardrails, handrails that you could hold on to if you needed to. So yeah, it wasn't what I imagined.
But and actually, the other point on that is that the couple of times where the path was cut into a cliff, for example, and so that was maybe a part that you might think might be a bit scary in terms of vertigo, that those were the only times when we really encountered other hikers, because those were day hikes as part of our longer stage. And so they're classified as what are called PR, which is a pequena rota in Portugal or here in Madeira. And so, yeah, a couple of those, because those are the most spectacular parts. Mm-hmm. And so we did see every now and then a couple of other hikers on some of those trails. And so those are the trails that people want to do as well, because they're the most spectacular.
Right.
And just a couple of other little things about practicalities. Accommodation was pretty widespread. We did book everything in advance because it was summer on Madeira, and we just thought that we should do that. And the prices were already higher than we would usually pay in continental Portugal. And so we did book everything in advance, which I think was wise for mm-hmm. summer. If you're going outside of summer, I think it's okay. But there are other, you know, you can also break up your stages in different ways. There are other accommodation options for different towns and things like that. So I think that part is okay. And the other thing that was perhaps surprising to us was that there was a lot of water available. There were water mm-hmm. fountains everywhere. And that was quite a surprise, because we usually carry a 1 liter bottle of water each on a Camino. And we had bought an additional two bottles of half a liter, because we thought, well, this is going to be this wild Camino. We're on top of cliffs. There'll never be any water. And then in the end, we discarded those extra bottles because we didn't need them, because there are water fountains in basically all of the towns that you pass through.
Yeah, and sometimes not even in a town, just in a random place. You also have those on mainland Portugal. It's common to see the fountains, but for some reason, I didn't expect to see so many here, but they are really widespread here. So yeah, water was not a problem.
All right, and then the other practical thing that we really want to talk about are the stamps. Mm-hmm. Because that was a cool thing about this Camino. Like you said, we weren't even aware that there was a credential or a pilgrim's passport or stamps until the day before we started. And it is kind of funny, because there's no certificate at the end, and that's the point of the pilgrim passport for the Camino de Santiago.
Is to get the Compostela.
To get the Compostela at the end. And so here you have this credential and you have stamps, but there's no certificate at the end. So the stamps are just for the fun of it, really. Mm-hmm. But it's a completely different type of stamp and stamp culture from the Camino de Santiago.
Yes. So in English, we actually use the same word for both of these things. We call them both stamps. But for a typical pilgrim's passport for the Camino de Santiago, they are ink stamps. But the other meaning of stamp in English is a postage stamp, like what you would use on a letter or a postcard. And that's actually the kind of stamp that they have here, which in Portuguese is a different word. So the ink stamps is a carimbo, whereas the postage stamp is a selo.
Which is a little bit confusing because that's cognate with the Spanish sello, which they use for the ink stamp.
Yes, yes. So when you're in Spain on a Camino de Santiago, you're collecting sellos, which are ink stamps. But here on Madeira, you are collecting selos, which are postage stamps. And so the other thing that's different about the way it works is that there are specific establishments that have the stamps, and there are 37 of them in total. So there's one for each freguesia that you pass through. Freguesia is a small administrative division that you also have in mainland Portugal. So I think they call them parishes usually in English. So yeah, and it'll typically be a bar or a restaurant that will have the stamp. And so you go there and ask for it. They didn't always know what it was, but I assume that was just, you know, new staff who hadn't been working there that long.
Right, so to back up a bit, the association has produced all of these stamps,
yes,
and then distributed them to these 37 places in particular, and then they're supposed to give them to the walkers when they come past.
Yes.
And so each of these bars or each of these places has a little box with these stamps that are on, what would you call them, on...
It's like a roll. They're actually stickers.
Yeah, they're postage stamp stickers that are on a roll, and so they can just basically tear off two of them and give them to us, and then we peel them off the roll and then put them into our pilgrim passport. And so, yeah, a couple of times, or a few times really, yeah, someone who was working at the bar would just have absolutely no idea. Mm-hmm. And we would say, we're collecting these stamps, and they're like, we don't have stamps here. And then I'd say, you actually have an image here, because the association produced a large image of each of the stamps, and that would often be displayed in a window at the bar. And so we'd say, look, you have this big stamp here in your window. What we want are the small stamps that are the same as this but smaller, and you have them in a box somewhere here in your counter. And then they'd be like, no, we don't have stamps. Mm. And then you had the name of all of the owners of all of the bars. And then we'd say, can you ask whoever it happened to
Fabio
be?
Fabio or whoever.
Right.
Yeah, because the association had also provided us with a PDF that included lots of information, actually, for all the 37 different locations where you're supposed to get your stamps. It tells you what the opening hours are, if there's one day of the week that they close, and also the name of the person responsible who definitely does know about the stamps and would know where the box of stamps was, and even their phone number. So I never had to go so far as calling the responsible person myself, but once I dropped the name of, oh, it's Fabio, who's the one who knows about this, then they would say, oh, okay, and they would call Fabio, and Fabio would tell them where the stamps were. So we always got the stamps in the end.
Yeah, and that only happened a few times, I guess. But then other times there were people who would know about it and who would be excited about it. And there was one particular time, and I don't know why this happened, but we walked in and the box was right there on the counter, and he must have seen us like out the window and said, oh, I bet they're here for the stamps, and quickly got his box from, you know, wherever it was and just laid it right out there. Because we often, especially if people didn't know, we would kind of look behind the bar and we would see the box.
Mm-hmm.
Because the box is the same for all the bars, and we would say, oh, it's, you know, in that box over there are the stamps, and they'd go, oh, okay, we didn't know what this box was that's been here. But yeah, sometimes they would be ready, they would know exactly where it was, and they would say, oh, right, you're here for the stamps, and they would, you know, take out the box, and that would be it. And then some of them would date them and sign them. They knew that that was sort of something that you're supposed to do. And so that was really cool. So it just made it different, because it was this sort of treasure hunt where we would say, right, today we have 4 stamps to collect, and here's where they are. And it helped us divide our days a little bit. So we would say, okay, it's maybe 2 hours till the next stamp, so maybe we can take a rest there, or we can get a juice or something from that bar. And so it was just a different, it's just a little different thing from the usual way of collecting stamps on the Camino. And so in the end, sometimes the bars were closed, and it's a little bit hard to avoid that, but you know, the association has done a really good job trying to get their affiliate bars be open all the time, or to choose places that are open, mm-hmm. you know, early in the morning, for example. And sometimes that wasn't possible. And so there are 37, as you mentioned, and we got 29 of them. And so there were 8 that we missed, but we'd been told before we started that if we missed one, then when we went to the next place, we should leave a gap in the pilgrim passport, because there's a square for each stamp or a rectangle for each stamp. And then at the end, the association would give us the stamps that we'd missed, and then we could put them exactly in the point where they are. And it's just really cool, because it's a celebration of the island, because each of the stamps has a picture on it, and the picture is related to that particular freguesia. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's a modern picture. For example, one of the freguesias has a paragliding center, and so the picture has a paraglider, you know, overlooking the ocean. But then some of them are really old pictures from 100 years ago, and they're in sepia or in black and white, you know, showing what the town looked like. And that was cool to see that as well. And we really liked it when we saw that they had the blown up version stuck up on their window, and then you could really see the picture really well. And it was cool that they were, you know, promoting the walk by doing that. All right, so just to finish off, we'd just like to make a couple of little comparisons. And it was interesting, while we were still doing this walk, I said to you something like, what are the differences that you see between this and the Camino de Santiago? And then you said, what I'm thinking about more is the similarities. So mm-hmm. do you want to explain that a bit?
Yeah, well, I believe that conversation happened pretty early on in our Camino, walking the Camino Real 23. And the first 3 days, I would say, were what felt most like a Camino de Santiago to me. But they were also, looking back now at the whole experience, probably our least favorite days, ultimately, because they were more urban. You know, we passed through a lot of settlements, and much less wild, whereas up in the western coast and the northern coast, the nature suddenly became much more rugged and much more impressive. But yeah, the first 3 days or so, it felt more like a village-to-village walk, like a Camino de Santiago. And then, of course, you know, we had the credencial, which we've been talking about for some time, so that was another kind of similarity.
And then the other thing was the path itself.
The path itself,
walked on the cobblestones.
Yeah.
And that aspect was cool, because it connected us. It made it feel like it was more than a nature walk. Every time, you know, we would go through a stretch where we wouldn't see the original cobblestones for some time, then we'd see them again and we'd say, oh, look, there they are.
Mm.
You know, and then we'd imagine people walking on these, or maybe in carts, you know, predating the automobile, you know, getting around the island on these cobblestones. And so that made us feel connected with the history of the island.
Yeah, so it you know, I think the similarity is that walking a Camino de Santiago is a unique way to experience a part of Portugal or a part of Spain or a part of wherever you're walking through, because you experience the land and its people and its culture in a different way than you would if you went there as a tourist, you know, by bus or by car or what have you. Pass through parts that you never would have passed through otherwise. And, you know, I feel like it's a much deeper experience to really kind of see all aspects of life in this area. So I felt like we got that here as well.
And then the other comparison that I think is interesting to make is between the two walks that we've done in Portugal that are not Camino de Santiago walks, which is this one, the CR23, and the Rota Vicentina, which we talked about last year. And these are both nature walks. And if you sort of describe them on a surface level, they sound quite similar, which is that you're walking along the coast, you're often above the coast, you're looking down on the ocean.
Right.
But I think the scenery is... I still think within that kind of general sameness, the scenery is quite different, mm-hmm. because on the Rota Vicentina, you're looking at beaches, firstly, and they're amazing, beautiful beaches. And also when we talk about being above the ocean and being on cliffs, it's more like they are cliffs, but they're also sand dunes, and you're mm-hmm. not that far above the ocean the way you are here.
No.
And these are really serious cliffs and serious mountains, and whereas those are kind of elevated sand dunes, let's say. And mm-hmm. so... Yeah, it is an interesting comparison, I think. But I think the scale here seems to be much more, you know, the ocean just seems to go on forever and the mountains are higher and all of that. So it's a little bit more dramatic, much harder, The Rota Vicentina is really fairly easy. The problem that people have with the Rota Vicentina is that you're often walking on sand, mm-hmm. and it can be hard to lift your feet out of sand if it's soft sand, you know, step after step. But the ups and downs are not anywhere near what they are like here.
Right.
So if you were sort of considering a nature walk in Portugal that wasn't a Camino de Santiago, well, what would you say point blank? Did you prefer this to the Rota Vicentina?
Yes, I think I'd have to say I prefer. Yeah, it's much more dramatic. Overall, it's the nature aspect is more impressive. Even though the Rota Vicentina is beautiful, that's a really beautiful coastline. But here it's different. The two, even though they're cliffy coastal views, they're completely different. And I think you just have to see it to understand why that is. But yeah, I mean, we're on an island out in the middle of the ocean. It's just a whole different geography and different plant life and not much animal life. We saw lots of lizards, but not much.
We saw lots of lizards. We saw hundreds of lizards every day.
Yeah.
And that was basically it.
Yeah.
You were calling out to snakes for the first few days because every time we would go through a kind of overgrown section of the path, you would say, hello, snakes, we're coming through. And then we looked up if there were snakes on Madeira, and there aren't.
Yeah, there are no snakes. Well, there's one form of snake, but they're completely harmless because they can't bite, and they live mostly most of their lives underground.
And they were introduced anyway.
Yeah, okay, they're not endemic. They're not native to Madeira. So yeah, you don't have to worry about snakes here. I thank you for looking that up because I hadn't bothered to do so. And so yes, I was making lots of noise to warn the snakes that we were coming through the grass so that they would get out of the way and would not bite us. But that was not, as it turned out, something to be concerned about. But yeah, so the nature is just completely different than it is on the mainland. And for me anyway, is much more exotic. And so therefore, you know, I think it's more impressive. And yeah, I think objectively it's more dramatic. The cliffs are taller. But a lot of it is that it's just more exotic. You know, we talked about the plant life, the flora. You see flowers blooming absolutely everywhere. I don't know if that's true year-round. I mean, we're here in July, so it's not springtime. And yeah, you see flowers just everywhere. Some are ones that I've seen before, and some I've definitely never seen before. So all of that makes it really interesting. And yeah, it's a fabulous nature hike that also has an historical aspect to it. And the fact that it, you know, makes this loop all the way around the island, I find really appealing because, you know, in a reasonable amount of time, for us it was 9 days, you really see the whole island. And so I feel like we've really done Madeira, combined with one more hike that we did today, actually, early this morning as we are recording, which was the Pico do Pico hike from Pico Arrieiro to Pico Ruivo. And that's inland in the interior, which is the one thing that we didn't really see on the Camino Real 23, and it is really, really spectacular scenery as well. So if you're coming to Madeira for the first time, or perhaps for the only time, then I do recommend doing that hike, or at least doing something in the interior as well. But just one day or a half day of that combined with the Camino Real 23, and actually you could even combine it with one of the other Caminos Reais, because there are various other ones that do cross the island through the interior, as opposed to the 23 that goes all the way around. And we were told by someone from the association that the number 27 is the most beautiful of those Caminos Reais that cross through the interior. So yeah, maybe do the 23 and the 27, and then you've really seen everything that the Madeira has to offer.
Right. So yeah, if you're up for an adventure, then Madeira and doing one of the Caminos Reais, or two of them, as you just said, could be an option for you. It's definitely something that we're really glad that we did. But it was, yeah, a big adventure. It wasn't easy, but we really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that we've experienced Madeira, which is also part of Portugal. You know, when in a recent episode, we talked about our Camino to Fatima and how we had seen this as kind of initiation ritual, as we'd recently gained Portuguese citizenship, and we felt like it was a very important part of Portuguese identity that we needed to experience in order to, you know, really understand what it meant to be Portuguese. And I'd never really thought in that way about Madeira or the Açores before, but, you know, this is also part of Portugal, and in some ways is very different from the Portugal that we know. So I'm really glad that I also now have experienced this and understand this aspect of Portugal.
Well said. And so until next time, bom caminho.
Oh, what else am I going to say? There's only bom caminho here. All right, bom caminho.
Thanks for listening. For more great content about the Camino de Santiago, visit our website at spiritofthecamino.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Spirit of the Camino. Buen Camino.